This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show.
Truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen here with Joel Elston. It's Thursday, June the 2nd, 2016. And we are welcoming back a guest we had a few weeks ago. David Bennett is here to talk this time about his book, A Voice as Old as Time, Contemplations for Spiritual Transformation. And David, thank you for joining us again.
Thanks, Walt. It's great to be here.
Last time we had you on the show, of course, we kind of rehashed what we talked about in previous interviews about your near-death experiences and what you've learned from them and your connections on the other side and so forth. And if you need connections on the other side, David's the guy to talk to. But what led to the creation of this new book? Because I get the impression that it's sort of a sequel, if you will, to your earlier adventures.
Well, it is. I had my my near death experience in way back in '83, and then I had another NDE in 11 years later in '94, and then in 2000 I had stage 4 lung cancer, and when going through the lung cancer, I started using a lot more of a daily practice. It would start with gratitude, and then I would go into meditation. And in the meditation, I would have a conversation with my spiritual family, and they would give me these reflections, otherwise known as contemplation. So I would contemplate with my soul family, and then I would write down these contemplations. And so I did this for years. It was a way for me to stay in that center of my being, so that I start out each day in that authentic way, that I'm truly who I am by connecting to my core being, that sort of thing. And so these contemplations, as I started, I worked on, trying to make myself a better person, to be more accepting, more tolerant, more all of those sort of things. But as I went along, I realized that my guides and guidance and the universe were kind of leading me down this path of transformation, where I was, really becoming the true version of who I really am.
And have you figured that out yet, who you really
are?
Well,
it's a constant – that's the neat thing, though. It's a moving target.
Yes.
It is, because as we grow, our identity changes. So – and to be authentic, we have to move along with it, So it's kind of interesting how a lot of times, we tend to feel like we're being static in life, but we're never really static. We're always moving. We're always evolving, in one way or another. We're moving in some direction, and usually there's a purpose behind it. And a lot of times we don't understand that purpose, but that's a part of that interwoven aspect of the universe unfolding in our lives, So, this, the spiritual journey enables, it enables the process of spiritual maturity. The past and feelings of separation can be overcome with a powerful way forward by using reflection. And so that's or contemplation, whichever term you're comfortable with. But contemplation allows us to use our inner vision to provide clarity in our daily life. So you go into contemplation, you spend that time in silence. It's a form of meditation. And then we're able to bring it into our daily life, where, because we're all travelers on this path wherever it leads us. And so the greatest tool that we can possess for spiritual development is the ability to be open and accepting, and to be able to integrate whatever comes through our consciousness, whether it comes through reflective practice like meditation or spontaneous, from the divine or from dreams, but to pay attention to all of that and to use it in our daily experiences.
Well, I know Joel does that on a regular basis, because Joel, you have a daily meditation practice yourself, don't you?
Absolutely. I've recently been experimenting with different types of meditation, and I'm fascinated that you sort of bring the contemplation aspect into it, because I just recently have been studying up a little bit and trying to implement some of that in my personal life as well.
Yeah, I used to have, before my cancer, I had a meditative practice where I would just go into stillness, either just pure stillness or focus on my breath, or maybe practice a mantra meditation, something like that. Walking meditation was really that was one of my big things before the cancer. So I had a very rich meditative life before, but it was all to achieve that state of stillness. The neat thing about contemplation is you still use that state of stillness now that you know how to go there, how to be there, but then you introduce an idea or a thought that occur, you know, and sometimes they occur during meditation. Sometimes you'll have, you know, something come into your meditation, and that's usually when my soul family is communicating with me. And so then it works with meditation in that state of stillness. And this thought or idea becomes your center focus. And it can happen in subsequent meditation also, you know, so it can be a theme for as much as a week, a month, you know, 6 months, a year. It depends upon where you are in your life's integration, where what you need to be working on. Ideas or thoughts or ideals can be your center of focus. And these contemplations provide a path, you know, into your own divine nature. They kind of lead you deeper into yourself, which is really neat, because this is where we start to see the transformation aspect. And unlike other meditation techniques designed to empty the mind, reflection intensely focuses on this idea while still in that state of stillness or mindfulness. I find it fascinating that Buddhist mysticism and Christian mysticism at the heart, you know, they share contemplation in common. It's a spiritual practice that's held in common in many belief systems, even if their beliefs or theologies are different. Like within Christianity, the contemplative tradition is dated to at least the 200s AD, and it's older, but most people point to like Anthony of the Desert. He was the father of the Desert Fathers, and he, a lot of people, you know, kind of point to him as the father of a contemplative tradition.
Well, as I've looked into this, and it's amazing how I had no idea you were going to bring this up, because this is something within the last week that I've been looking into with all the different types of I'm sold on the concept of meditation. I use it in my practice with my clients, and introducing the thought into the stillness has to be an incredibly powerful tool. Now, in your book, do you get into detail of how you do this? Is that a step-by-step method, or you just have sort of evolved into this?
Well, what my book is, it's a little different. I've arranged the reflections in the book as a natural progression toward awakening. So what I do is I give a brief introduction. You know, I leave it up to the reader to determine how they achieve their stillness, because there's so many ways, you know. And everybody, it doesn't work the same for everybody. But then once you're able to achieve that, this is where my book comes in. And so I give a brief explanation. But then what the bulk of the book is, it's broken up into 44 chapters that of all different aspects. You know, so, you know, from finding and knowing yourself to living in love and eventually finding your purpose. But woven in are common themes like connecting to your divine essence, using loving intention, and expressing gratitude while on the journey, you know, that we call life. I like to write from the premise that everything is alive and with the spiritual energy of love. I believe that love is the eternal flame that's found everywhere and in everything, and that we can all access the wisdom of our true nature so that we can face life's many decisions feeling empowered and with clear vision and using right action and a sense of purpose. So my wish is that this book becomes a tool in people's spiritual transformation. Tools like reflection can assist us in living a more purposefully, more authentic, and even more joyfully in our lives. My purpose in writing the book was not to express any specific philosophy or doctrine, but rather offer bits of truth that might resonate with other people's passage. You know, there's so many ways to use the book. You can open it to any page, kind of like bibliography, or you can and see what you find there, or you might read a whole reflection or just a portion. Each page is like one reflection, but within each page there's multiple paragraphs, and you could take just one paragraph. So, but they're all written around these 44 themes. You know, acceptance, tolerance, truth, breaking free of separation, balancing and centering, using our creativeness, becoming aware, fearlessness, joy, inspiration, integrity, enlightenment, being. Using your untapped potential, awakening, harmony, peace, living in the moment, you know, that brings presence. So they're meant to stimulate your intellect and your intuition all at the same time while in that state of stillness. And that opens that connection to your authentic self, your higher being. And I really do believe that when you pair up your intellect and your intuition, that you're creating a bond that with the universe, you know, and you're telling the universe, okay, I'm here to work. I'm here to work on myself. I'm here to make myself the best person I can possibly be.
Wow, that has to be. I can't wait to read it, because it tunes into so much what Walt and I talk about every week. And this really breaks it down, and I think this could be an incredible tool for someone. And I like the idea that you can sort of leave it to the universe, is how I look at it. Open it up and see what comes out. You know, it probably is going to affect a lot of people in a very positive way, I hope. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm with you, Joel. I really like to leave it up to the universe, you know, as to which direction to go in life. I found that when I do that, things usually move along the way they're supposed to be. It's when I let my ego kind of get in front of me, and that's
wow.
That,
yeah,
we don't know anything about that. No.
Well, no, right? I mean, we're all human, and we're all fallible human beings, right? Let's face it. You know, we all do silly things at times. We let our emotions and drama kind of, you know, overtake us sometimes.
Sometimes I'm trying to get through the day without doing it all day long.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, well, it's one of those things that. But the more you work on yourself, the more you recognize it. Oh God, that's some drama that I really don't need to mess with. You know, and the sooner you can recognize it, the sooner you can come back into your center, and you can just leave the drama aside. Like my wife and I, we say our house, it's a drama free zone. This is a drama free zone. You know, no drama here. You know, type of thing. And we're creating a sanctuary in our own home, so that even when we're out in the world and we get swept away with stuff, we can come home and we have a sanctuary here. You know,
which is healthy for sure, and mm-hmm. and terrific mm-hmm. to set up. I guess the thought that keeps coming to my mind is, I can get myself into a good place, kind of describing what you're talking about here. But I can also get myself into a dull place, by which I mean, I can get myself into sort of a drama-free place and find that I'm really bored because there's no drama going on.
Yeah, you know, because we've lived in it so much, we're brought up with it, with the competitive nature, with the way that, you know, it's just the way we raise our children these days, to be, you know, the best, to compete. You got to, you know, climb that ladder, all that stuff. Well, all of that is, you know, grasping. It's all grasping, and it tends to create drama. you know, because we're hanging on, we're holding on. The Buddhists have a philosophy of when it with a certain concept, like you want to achieve, say, peace in your life, okay? Well, not to grasp it, but to hold it lightly, because the minute you grasp it, it's going to slip through your hands. It's kind of like a slippery fish, you know. It's one of those things you hold lightly so that you can work with it. It's not something that you grasp so that you own it.
It's like holding a live bird in your hand.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, and you have to allow it. You have to reach out with your heart and. But I like that coherence of heart and mind. Reach out with your heart and mind at the same time, and that's where contemplation helps to diminish the ego, so that it's not on that constant battlefield. You know, where where drama is a part of the, you know, part of the battle a lot of times.
Well, for those of us who are stuck on that battlefield, can't seem to get off it. Give us a little incentive from your perspective. What does it feel like when you finally get past the boredom and you actually get to a place where this is kind of fun?
Well, actually, that's just it. That's where the joy. You find joy and happiness in just simple little pleasures. You don't need to have the big, you know, some big experience in order to bring the joy. I find joy in just the quiet moment. Like, I'm going to go out this afternoon. I'm going to do some painting on my deck.
And I give you credit for finding joy in that. I really do.
Walt, I dislike painting. It's one of my least favorite things.
As I think about it right now, my forearm is getting sore.
Yeah, but you know what? There's something about being outside in the sunshine, just doing a menial task that allows me to just be there, be present, be fully there. You know, and that's when my heart sings. When I feel myself being totally present, that's when my heart sings. And so I find a lot of joy in it. So I look forward to it. So, you know, that it becomes one of those self-perpetuating things where you're looking forward to being in that present moment, to be here now, doing exactly what you're doing and paying close attention. It's like when you're having a conversation. Be fully attentive with the other person or persons, like we are here right now. We're being fully attentive with each other. We're giving each other our fullest attention. And in that focus, there's a certain amount of opening up your being, opening up your essence. There's an expansion that occurs, you know. And that's why you know, it may seem kind of dull without the drama, but actually it's very rich. It's got that palpable richness to it that just, you know, it oozes life, you know, which a lot of times we don't get to experience.
I have a situation that I often tell when I'm working my clients, that drama and chaos are optional events, and they are actually surprised that those events are an optional participation. You don't have to participate in chaos. It's going to knock on the door, but you don't have to answer. And I think your description of learning to live without it, and actually thriving without it, because it is an illusion of excitement. It does bring something, the drama and the chaos. One of my books that I have in my mind is The Addiction of Chaos. That I see so many people, including myself over the years, that would get involved in chaotic, dramatic, ongoing, useless events, and they propel your life. And then when you're not doing them, there's almost a withdrawal when you go through of life's boring because I don't have that. And I love the fact that you and your wife have instituted a no drama zone. I need to get one of those signs printed up here and put it in my office, actually. But the truth is, when I have worked with my clients, and I want to recommend your book to my clients, because this is such an incredible connection of how to escape, minimally, how to escape the drama of life and realize that you don't have to volunteer to be involved with that all the time.
Yeah, Joel, that's an excellent way of looking at drama, that it's, you know, it's an activity that you either elect to participate in or not, because it doesn't have to rule our lives. I had a thought and it just went flying out. Isn't that funny? I guess it wasn't meant to be expressed.
No, it was on the express line. That's the problem. It was gone.
Yeah, I should have wrote the note down anyway.
But as I've gone, you know, in my personal journey, I had a lot of time being alone with myself in the beginning of early in my recovery. I had so much trauma, so much chaos in my life that once things were still, I was alone with the person that I really didn't like the most in the world at that point. That was me. And as I learned me and as I learned everything, I enjoy solitude. I enjoy, like you're saying, I find my mindset is so different. A quick example this week is we are in Virginia Beach, so we the weather finally broke for us, and it got hot this week. And traditionally, that's the day that your air condition breaks.
it's a rule.
So I realized about midday that it was 80 degrees in my house and it wasn't getting any cooler. So I can't sleep when it's really – and that's one area I'm very spoiled at. So I called the air conditioning guy out and he came out. Of course, I have a leaky coil. My house is 5 years old, and the warranty on my air conditioning expired 4 days before I discovered it.
Of course.
So, yeah. So I there was a point in my life where there would have been a lot of frustration attached to that. And I was shocked at myself because my reaction was I went straight to the place of – I am really fortunate that I'm in a position that I'm going to be able to afford this without a problem. It's no big deal. I'm more concerned how fast they can get it done than the cost of it. And I keep telling the guy, I says, well, if I do it now, it's going to be overtime rates. And I'm going, well, we can do it now. Just get it done because I don't want to sleep in the hot. So my perspective in life is so much different because I wish my air conditioner didn't break, but since the fact that it did, I'm in a position that I was able to fix it. It didn't create any problems. I had it done quickly. And when you can live like that, when you've adjusted that, sort of adjusted your sail to the where the universe is, you know, what's going on in my response to it, that sort of ties into not – I could have gotten to the dramatic effect of why me? How did this air conditioner break? It's only 5 years old. You know, the few days after the warranty expired, blah, blah, blah. None of that mattered.
And, of course, if you had done that, you would have attracted a whole lot more of the same kind of thing.
Right. And the guy was able to fix it. Turns out they were able to informationally, the refrigerant is $78 a pound. He was able to recover quite a bit of the refrigerant, so it saved me like $200-something doing that. So I looked at it like, wow, that's pretty cool. I saved a little bit of money here. And within learning to live, and I just used that one example to sort of back up where Dave is at, when you're living in a chaotic mindset and events happen, your response is chaotic often. When you're living in a peaceful mindset and sort of an awareness, your response is more of, this is not that big of a deal. I don't know how long I'm going to be here on the planet, but I assure you, I want to look back, and I don't want one of the top 10 things in my life that I remember is my air conditioning breaking. I don't want it to be an event. It's just no big deal. Does that make sense? So what you're saying, David, of when you can live this way and sort of touch that inner solitude and not be a bad thing, that's a very exciting concept for a lot of people I work with. I've learned to implement probably 90% of that in my life. I wish I did it 100%. But my clients are often shocked when I point out to them that none of this, all of this behavior and thought pattern is an optional thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because all of that you were just describing, when I work with my clients, I point out for them to recognize what is just the circumstances that are happening here so that you can rise above it. Once you recognize the air conditioning's broken and it's getting hot in the house, that's just circumstance. That's just – you know, that's just what's happening, and how you attach yourself to it. Just like you were saying, you know, do I choose to dive into drama, or do I choose to stand back with more clarity so that I can, you know, and with that clarity, you're able to problem solve so much faster. You're much more productive in your tasks and everything that you do. It's because when you can step back and become more of the observer of what's happening, it amplifies your awareness. And so with that connection to a greater awareness, I mean, the answers are right there. And they're there in a very calm and peaceful way. Even though chaos may be happening all around you, a lot of times you can stand there. Like one time I was trying to get a grasp on these concepts, because they were all kind of spinning around me. But at the same time, my human life was in chaos. You know, I just had all kinds of stuff going on in my life that was just not a friendly place to be in my life. And so I happened to have an opportunity to sit at the feet of a Rinpoche and speak with him. And I said, you know, my life it feels like this whirlwind. It's just this whirlwind, and it's just whirling around me. And sometimes I feel like I'm this pillar in the middle of this whirlwind, and I just don't know what to do. You know, where should I go? And the Rinpoche just had these simple words for me. This is all he had to say to me the whole day, was be the pillar.
Wow. Wow.
Just be the pillar.
That's deep. That's intense.
If he said that to me, I would have said, but I'm not a pillar.
Well, one of my really close friends, I do a lot of power lifting and exercise. And over the years, I've met a lot of Eastern European friends. And I have a very good friend, he's Polish, and he visits frequently. And one day we were talking, we were at dinner, and one of my friends asked him, she said, she had her point of view. She said, the Polish people are very noble. He said, they have suffered so much. And he immediately interrupted her. And he said, the Polish people have never suffered. We've endured, but we have never suffered. Suffering is an optional event. And I was like blown away by his immediate defense of that term to him, that yes, we've had a lot of stuff happen in our history, but we as a people don't suffer. We choose to endure. And his perspective on that sort of, you know, I've often heard, and I've heard, I say this sometimes, suffering is an optional event. And pain's going to happen in life. If you suffer from that pain, that you don't realize that you're choosing to suffer from that pain. It's going to be pain, but suffering is a mindset, at least from my perspective. And so responding to the chaotic events is a very similar type thing to, is your situation causing you suffering? Is your situation just the situation? And can you just be the pillar? When you're the pillar, there is no suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because you can observe the whirlwind.
Yes.
Once you're the pillar, and you can, and a lot of times that's when you can find the exit, you know?
Yes.
When you can stand for a moment in your authentic self and just be aware, you can find the exit out of the chaos, and you can find, you know, because that's what it's all about, is finding that exit strategy that's going to help you to move on. Because, you know, in life, our pendulum is constantly swinging back and forth, you know, and I like to think of it as there's two poles in life. There's your spiritual side, and there's that humanness, that self, and it's constantly swinging back between spirit and self. And to have nice, gentle swing that's normal. That's the way we should be living our life. But sometimes when chaos is involved, it pulls that pendulum all the way over to the self side, and then it lets go, you know, and then you swing all the way over, up on the spiritual side, and it has these erratic swings, and life is, and it just creates more chaos. So the more you allow chaos to pull at you, the more chaos you have. And so it's interesting when you can be the pillar, or if you can, you know, clarify yourself, go into your authentic self and create that awareness. That's when you know, you get that gentle rhythm, because that's what life's really supposed to be. We're supposed to experience. We're supposed to swing back and forth a little bit. That's natural. That's being human. We can't always be in that spiritual, you know, we can't always be that spiritual being, you know, unless you're some super high holy person maybe. But, you know, most of us have a daily life that we have to participate in that doesn't allow us to be the monk on the mountain.
Well, that raises a very important question, and I'm going to ask each of you in turn what your answer is. But let's bring this whole thing back to earth, if you will, and start with the most basic question. Okay, we've bought into the idea that it's good to have a perspective, to not get all wrapped up in the drama and so forth. Mm-hmm. Okay, step number one, how do we start? David, how do you start? How do you get yourself into that place?
Well, first thing I'm going to say, Walt, is true. It's hard because today's hyperactive and attention demanding world makes reflection no easy task. But nonetheless, we strive to find a way to carve out mental space, and I think the starting point there is to find a few moments a day. It's not hard to do. We have moments where we're alone. In the bathroom, when we're by ourselves.
You mean without the reading material?
Without the reading material, exactly. You know, but there's ways to introduce moments, and that's the way I think. If I were going to start, I would instruct to find moments. There are moments in life because we have to deal with the kids, we have to deal with all our responsibilities and our duties in life, and life seems to be even more attention demanding now than it ever was. There's things that are always pulling at us, but we can find moments. There are lots of moments. Even if you put I used to, on the way to and from work, I'm in the car, I'm alone, I'm driving. I used to put self-improvement type, back in those days they were cassettes, but nowadays, you can just download it on your iPod or
iPhone. You're dating yourself there, David.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah. I didn't want to go into the 8-track days.
So. I'm about to say, David, yeah, you didn't talk about the 8-track. That's good.
But you can bring mindful subjects to yourself. There's opportunities. We have opportunities in our day to day where we can bring these mindful moments in, and so I they then shape our energy. They help us to mold it. That's the reason why I like to do it first thing in the morning, and that doesn't work for everybody. Some people like to do it before they before they go to sleep at night, or they may have a period of time, during a break or something that they can do it. But for me, in the morning is best because I haven't started my day. I don't even roll out of bed before I start my gratitudes.
So walk us through. I mean, all right, you got this moment, and you finally carved it out of your 24-hour day. You got 5 minutes. What do you do with it?
I got 5 minutes. What I do is I give thanks for everything in my life. Whatever is going on in my life, whether I perceive it as good or bad, I'm going to take some time and be thankful.
You're thankful for bad things? Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, when I was going through the cancer, my spine had collapsed, everything, I was grateful for the opportunity to go through that suffering because I understood that there was growth opportunity there for me.
What are you, some sort of a masochist or something?
it sounds that way, and a lot of people thought that was pretty nuts, but I learned a lot. And a lot of times, when do we reach out for God, for our higher connections? But when we're suffering, when we're at our lowest, right? That's when we're reaching out. So I like to give thanks. So I have this time that I've set aside, wherever it is, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time being thankful, being grateful. Gratitude is, to me, is the first step. And then I'm going to and in that gratitude, I'm also going to be let's see, how can I express this? I'm not going to beat myself up for things that I may not have done as well as I could have, okay? I'm going to be accepting. So I'm going to introduce some self-acceptance of this is who I am right here, right now, and that I intend, using intention, to move forward in a heart-centered way. So, that's a great place to start.
I have a feeling your answer is going to be similar, Joel, but what do you do?
Well, Walt, you predicted already. the gratitude for me is what I do now, and what I did to get here is two different things. But, you know, when somebody is starting this process, it's to me, I had to almost sort of learn how to respond to it instead of getting in front of it. In the beginning, I would see these things happen, then I would blow up, and then I would have to be able to say, wait a minute, was that the best way to do it? And as I've evolved, I wake up in a very similar state, and I think I've told you this. I have conditioned myself automatically. When my feet hit the ground, I say thank you every morning. I really do. People laugh at me when I tell them that, but I wake up every morning and say thank you. I wanted a great opportunity. I have another day to do this, at least the start of another day. And I really start living in that state of gratitude. And to me, that everything for me, and I know you like appreciation is a more descriptive term for you, but gratitude for me is the basis for everything to pivot in my life. It's taking moments and looking at no matter what has happened, as we've talked about before, every event in my life had some twist that later made complete sense. And without these events, you know, I had to eat out of a trash can many years ago when I was homeless. And that event was one of the worst events of my life until other events happened in my life that made me look at that differently. Now, I can't say that I'm grateful that I ate out of a trash can, but I truly can say I'm grateful for the experience and what that experience brought to me later in life. So operating from a place of gratitude for and with focus on what I have, the abundance within me, the gratitude to be able to survive the experiences. I remind myself every day, I am 100% successful in getting through stuff I didn't think I would get through. So that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Oh yeah,
I love batting 100%. So I went to jail. I've been homeless. I built my life back. I lost my son. All of that stuff, I have been 100% successful in dealing with. And I didn't think I could deal with any of those things. So by reminding myself on a daily basis, and you got to start small. And I know people when they say, well, they don't understand my predicament. You do start by taking bits of time and stopping the thought process. When you're in that woe is me state for me, I stop and say, I will look at what I have. I look around. I see the tangibles that I have. I see where I'm at in my life. I see people that have it a lot worse than I have are getting along every day, and they're very happy. I remind myself of all of those things. So using an internal dialogue, but everything pretty much where David was at, spins off of a place of gratitude. When I'm in a grateful state, I tend to invite more things to be grateful state. When I'm in a ungrateful state or I'm perceiving a lot of lack in my life, I invite more lack. And lack is for me the pity party that I years ago would throw and then get mad that nobody chose to attend. But walking through with our audience, you know, you're talking to people. When we're talking to ourselves, we get it. But somebody that just may be tuning in for the first time and saying, "What are these clowns talking about? They don't understand my problems." And this is where you almost take on everything is a lesson if you allow it to be a lesson. And learning that what you go through, sometimes the best way out is just simply go through it instead of trying to fight it. Go through it. And you're going to be dinged up and you're going to feel it, but the strengthening process from having overcome it and the experience is what this journey, at least in my perspective, what this journey in life is all about.
You mentioned that I like the word appreciation. I've actually kind of moved on. I'm not using the word cherishing or cherish because it is a reminder to me that when I'm trying to feel gratitude or appreciation for something that's been difficult, that's been something in my face, harmful, hurtful, something like that. Trying to remember to cherish what I've gotten out of it is both a reminder of what I'm up against in terms of my own personal development, and it's also a reminder of where I need to get to. And that's important for me because when I'm personally facing something, now I've never actually had to eat out of a trash can, so I can't say I've ever had that kind of extreme traumatic event. My traumas are of the little daily variety. But among my little traumas, it's always my first reaction is, like you were alluding to earlier, how could that happen to me? Why is this happening to me? This shouldn't happen to me. And the word cherish is a way to remind myself, get off that track, get onto the track of where is the silver lining on this? There's got to be a silver lining somewhere. And if I can just keep my focus there long enough, I can find it. And when I can find that silver lining, then I can see the whole thing differently, experience it differently, and among other things, make it go away quicker.
Wow, yes, that's a good point, Walt. Really good point.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that when you don't allow life's adversity to spiral, then you're reducing that suffering. You're reducing whatever the challenge could be, you know. And the way I do that, the way I kind of nip it in the bud right off the bat is I infuse love into as many situations as I can. Because love is one of those things that brings me back into my flow, and you know, when you breathe through love, when you use that as your core, because in my near-death experience, that's what I experienced was love, and I was like, wow, you know, if I could live with love at my center, at my being, I can, you know. Everything is connected to love. I'm connected to the universe. So I like to use love as that centering force a lot of times to eliminate that adversarial type of spiral that creates suffering.
That's really the thing you remember most about those NDEs, isn't it? The love that came through it. Because that seems to permeate your entire message.
It does. It does. And it's and a lot of people, because love has one of those archetypical type of energies attached to it. You know, we have so many different – you say the word love and so many people are going to perceive it in a million different ways. But the neat thing about the love in that universal light is that it's all-encompassing and that it's a part of everything. And we as humans, our mind is so – confined and feeling separate all the time, which is another illusion. That's another show. We get lost a lot of times. We just get lost because we don't feel like we're connected to that love. And the neat thing about the NDE message is that you realize, wow, we are love. That was the shocker that I came away with that absolutely stunned me, was how much that I'm loved. You know, no matter what is going on in my life and no matter what I've done in my life, I'm loved. And so that's a great starting point, you know, along with gratitude too.
Not that you really have to have an NDE, a near-death experience, in order to experience that. You can actually experience it without that. But that was the kicker, so to speak, the thing that kind of kicked the whole thing off for you.
It did for me, yeah. That was the seed. I like to think of it as, you know.
The seed, okay, that's good.
That was the seed that started everything, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is very cool. Now, I have to then take it to the next step. Okay, we've kind of got the first 5-minute session under control. Okay, we got through it okay. We weren't burned. The arms and legs are still attached, so that's
good. No lightning strikes.
No lightning strikes, yeah. And the really weird thing, of course, is that the problem hasn't gone away. But for some reason, it's a little bit less, which we aren't quite clear about. So what do you do next?
Well, I mean, next, I think you focus on your mode of expression, because expression shapes our reality. Assumptions, a lot of times we perceive things and we make assumptions. And most people don't realize that when we assume, we lead ourselves away from our own reality, because reality is in this present moment. And when we assume something, we're projecting either future or we're relating to past hurts or pains. And so assumption can actually pull us away from our and cut us off from our flow of life.
And we're really good at it too.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, most of it, when you start to really catalog your day, because a lot of people one thing that I teach some of my clients is that if they feel like, you know, life is out of control, to at the end of the day or maybe periodically through the day to take a look at, you know, what has your day been and what have your reactions been to it? Kind of like a review, okay, kind of like a life review. But do it in small segments, you know, and to do it without judgment as much as possible. But when you start to do that, when you start to look at yourself, you say, and you look at the way you're reacting to, you know, what's going on in your life and things like that, you see that you're making these assumptions, or you're projecting into the future, or you're relating from the past, and that. That tends to make you less effective and less productive because you're not being totally present. You're not being totally here. So I like to try to get people to recognize when they're being pulled away, you know, and there's ways to do that by, you know, self-reviews, by practices in being present. Mantras are good for that. Sometimes mantras can bring you right back into a present moment. You know, there's a lot of different techniques you can use. But like with my book, if you're doing reflective work, then those moments when you feel like you're being pulled away, go back to what was the reflection I was working on this morning? You know, what was it that you know, was part of my day? You know, what is it that I'm supposed to be focusing on?
And also, Walt, when I from sort of my perspective is I look at it when I'm working with my clients of and in my own personal life. If, you know, like you said, we got through the first few minutes of that piece, feeling a little bit better, but what I perceive is the problem is still there. So, you know, that's when I often talk about the law of action. You know, is that problem? My perception of that problem, if it's still there, am I responding to it the same way? Is my okay? I'm thinking clearer about it, but the problem is still there. Am I doing the same techniques to address the problem? I often say, if your life is going exactly like you want it to be, keep doing exactly what you're doing. If it's not, it makes no sense to keep doing exactly what you're doing. So when that problem is still there, what am I going to be able to do to address it? The first thing that I have to establish is the problem. Is my, again, I keep saying perceived problem because it's not always the problem. But is my perceived problem something that is in my direct control? If it is, then I have a chain of events that I can follow. If it's not in my direct control, I have to quit letting that be my problem. Because I have to accept, if it's not in my direct control, I have to accept that. When I ask people to list their problems, what's the five things you want to change? Well, we then go through the list of the five things they want to change. And if it's, well, I wish my husband or wife would do this. Well, we're going to scratch that one off. That's not in our control. That's what I have to develop is establishing or is what I'm perceiving as a problem that's in my control. And that's a very freeing experience when you don't have to give power to something that is not in your control. And that's sort of a step two for me, that next level of if there is control, I do need to take action. If I need a job, I need to do something differently. If I need, you know, additional money, I can't keep doing the same thing. You know, I had a guy tell me 2 weeks ago, I've put in 350 online resumes and I haven't gotten a call. And I said, well, maybe the online resume thing ain't going to work for you, huh? And he laughed a little bit. And what we implemented differently was he applied to Costco online. He followed up the next day and took his application in, resume in. He shook the manager's hand and said, I applied online. I know my application isn't going to stand out. I would love to be a part of your team. The manager actually took him in the back. They talked, and he got a job on the spot. He did something differently. He quit just sending in the application online. He followed up with an in-person visit and immediately had a different response.
Wow, Joel, that's so synchronistic, because this morning, my reflection this morning that I actually did this morning was what I wrote down after my reflective time was break out of habitual responses, because habit may veil our awareness. By just falling into habit, we sometimes mask our own awareness because we're doing something that's comfortable and we've done and done and done and done, and we don't have to think about it. But it actually veils our awareness. But when you open up to your awareness, that's where the real power to free yourself, to liberate yourself is.
Absolutely.
What we're really talking about here, too, is whether or not we're going to keep staring at the black cloud.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because the black cloud is there, and the more that we focus on it, the more it's there. It just doesn't go anywhere. In fact, it gets bigger. It enlarges. It takes over our lives. The whole trick is finding whatever method. All these methods we're describing here are just ways of diverting our attention away from the black cloud onto something else.
Exactly. Like you said, the more you focus on that black cloud, the more it's going to intensify.
Oh, yeah.
You need to pull your awareness away from that and into something that's more empowering, more self-empowering.
That's such an powerful the power in that tool of sort of looking away or not allowing this one black cloud to occupy your mindset and be the point of your existence, and then realizing there's millions of other clouds. I don't have to have that one cloud. I have a really funny story of a client of mine is a very interesting young man, and he's from a very wealthy family. And he was complaining about his cable TV the other day, and I found this funny. He has most people don't even have this. He has every DirecTV channel that there is,
and he watches them all.
that's where it gets funny. He said he has a $390 a month DirecTV.
Oh my goodness!
Oh my god!
So I'm working with him on he doesn't do anything. His family takes care of him, and he said I'm really upset. Channel 220 doesn't work.
I'm impressed that he even knows it.
Well, what he was doing, he was flipping through, and he saw that it didn't work. And I said, you have 987 channels. That's an accurate number. And channel 220 doesn't work, and your focus, one of your problems today is channel 220 doesn't work. And I said, what is it? And he goes, it's C-SPAN 4. And my response,
that one's riveting.
I said, have you ever watched C-SPAN in your life? And he goes, no. He said, that's not the point. It just doesn't work. And he has become so conditioned, the habitual thinking, to focus on what's not right that he can't see the other 986 channels that work perfectly fine, that he only watches like 10 of them anyway, but it's a whole other story. But just like David was saying, We these habitual thoughts destroy us, and we don't realize it. When you keep applying the same method to resolve a problem and it doesn't work each time, it's like the equivalent of hitting the return button on your computer. Okay, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. Eventually, the computer it wants to pop up a screen and says, that doesn't work. Please hit another button. But I've done that. I just hit the button over and over. Now, I know it's not working. It's out of frustration. But that's sort of the real-life response. We get stuck hitting that same button habitually and then get frustrated that, why isn't it working? Well, that button's broke. And we, instead of focusing on that button being broke, let's get away from that and let's focus on what is working. Such a big difference.
It's a huge difference. Well, first of all, he actually had a great tool available to him. He could have turned on any of the other C-SPANs, C-SPAN 1, 2, 3, doesn't matter which one. And just by focusing on that for 10 minutes, he'd have forgotten completely about 220 because it is so soporific. It just puts you right to sleep. So you won't even be thinking about that anymore.
More black clouds.
Yeah, well, that's exactly true. Well, that's the other side, too. Of course, if you're paying too much attention to C-SPAN, you're finding out all the black clouds that everybody else is creating around the world.
Well, yes, absolutely. I'm sorry, David. Go ahead.
Well, and also, we need to avoid escapism as well. You know, we need to really participate, and by spending all our time, I don't know, delving into, you know, like I try to avoid television as much as possible.
Yeah, TV is the ultimate default activity.
Yeah,
because
well,
you aren't actually active.
No.
You're not doing anything. You're not thinking anything. You're not really participating in anything. You're just kind of observing.
Yeah. I like things that stimulate the mind. So if I do watch television, I try to watch something that's, you know. But I shouldn't talk because here I've been on television. I've been, you know, stuff like that.
Well, so. You just have to reach out to where people are. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, television can, as you're saying. I know I've several shows that tend to be uplifting, law of attraction based shows. You know, I love to hear about new medicine. There's all types of television can. It's like with anything else. We can either view television as a very negative, time diverting event, which it is a lot of times for a lot of people, or if you know where to look, there is limitless information available to you at a touch of a button. And a lot of quality information. I know Oprah's network has a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of talk about, you know, she has a lot of spirituality, a lot of law of attraction type shows. And I watch a lot of that. So it can be helpful, but it's like anything else in our life. I can escape on, and I love we got to avoid the escapism. You know, I can waste time in any venue. Television just makes it very easy if you want to sort of single that out. But I like, for example, I suggest people all the time, turn off the news. You don't need the news on. It doesn't mean I can still look at headlines and stuff and know what's going on in the world. But that constant negativity poured into my head from the TV about everything that's wrong is not a positive for me. And I know a lot of people think our country's in horrible shape right now, because a lot of is what's being represented on the news. Where I look at it like we live in amazing times. I'm grateful to be alive during this time, and the difference is simply your perspective. Once again,
yeah. Television is a tool. I'd like to put a plug in though for the show I was just on. That's The Story of God with Morgan Freeman on National Geographic.
Ooh. Wow. Do you know when that's airing, or has it aired
already? It's already aired, but you can go on the National Geographic website and view them at any time.
Oh, wow. Wow, I will do that. I can't wait to see that, David.
I'm in the first episode.
It sounds like that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I had a blast.
Not the least of which because you're talking to Morgan Freeman, but also you're talking about a topic that's, you know, near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, and Morgan is he's very very attuned to a universal consciousness and that sort of thing. So,
well, I know this is going to sound weird, Joel, but we actually managed to get through the hour faster than normal.
Wow, that is amazing.
That's what happens when you have three of us talking at once. I mean, David, it's bad enough when there's two of us, right? But when you get three of us, it's like everybody's time just got reduced by a third. And all of a sudden, boom, you're done.
Wow, it has been great. Very good. It's so good to talk to you, David. I hope to meet you in person one day. I might get down your way. I'll let you know.
Yeah, not that far away. So, yeah, let me know if you're coming this way.
I certainly will.
Thanks for joining us again, too, David, and sharing the story of your book. It's always great to have you on here because you always bring these really cool concepts. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Walt. Thank you, Joel.
All right. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem crazy.